This is KBOO Portland. The time is 9 a.m. Coming up on Political Perspectives, Patrick Lovell speaking about Forward 13, Waking Up the American Dream. At 9:30, we speak with Maui-based environmental activist Sam Small about the implications of this week's ruling overturning an ordinance regulating GMOs and pesticides on Kauai. At 10 is Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Followed at 10:15 by Flashpoints, looking at the choices facing the Obama administration as the situation continues to unravel in Syria. And then exploring the benefits of tax inversion therapy for consumers and the economy. And we continue coverage of the situation in Gaza. At 11 on the incomparable Radio Zine, host Per Fogering speaks with Oregon author Doug Matheson about his new book, Actually Thinking versus Just Believing. It's a call-in show on how we develop our opinions on and ways of viewing the world. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a KBOO member, you can remedy that by going to kboo.fm. Click where it says Donate Today.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor
Negative Land.
Performing live Friday, August 29th at the Crystal Ballroom, 1332 West Burnside in Portland.
We got so much power.
How many time zones there are in the Soviet Union?
Since 1980, Negative Land has been creating records, CDs, video, fine arts, books, radio, and live performance using appropriated sounds, images, objects, and text.
Negative Land will be performing with Daniel Mensch and Cascadian Knights. All ages welcome.
Not even funny.
Again, that's Negative Land, Friday, August 29th at the Crystal Ballroom, 1332 West Burnside in Portland.
More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The loudspeaker spoke up and said, "Christianity is stupid."
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Triple Divide, fracking documentary on Friday, September 12th at 7 p.m. Triple Divide, directed by Public Herald investigative journalist Joshua Prabanek and Melissa Troutman, deconstructs the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection's handling of shale gas development through fracking, and will uncover how DEP and the industry have handled violations within Pennsylvania's highest classified watersheds, what happened in the 2011 Bradford County blowout, water contamination complaints, health issues, and the split estate landowner dispute. Triple Divide, fracking documentary will be showing at the First Unitarian Church in the Elliott Chapel, located at Southwest 12th and Salmon Street in Portland. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Kathleen Stevenson for Political Perspectives. My guest is Patrick Lovell, whose film Forward 13, Waking Up the American Dream, shows next Thursday, September 4th, at the Clinton Street Theater. Patrick Lovell is an accidental filmmaker slash activist who had his own economic crisis after the market crashed in 2008. He is currently on tour with Forward 13. He joins us now from Park City, Utah. Welcome, Patrick. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thank you for having me, and I really appreciate the introduction by the Talking Heads. I think that's the theme song of the moment.
Yes, and I noticed that you mentioned that you often found yourself humming that song earlier in your life.
Yeah, Exactly. I've lived it.
Now, you were a senior producer with a nationally syndicated television program. Tell us about what happened that led you eventually to making this film, but what happened particularly in your economic life, in your home life?
So there was a company out of Seattle, a large residential and commercial development company, that was the executive producer of a company or a show called Home Team. That was a nationally syndicated television show where we went around the country and gave houses to deserving people and great storylines. And then we would just basically invite community, friends, family to help rebuild a house and present it. And that was the sort of storyline. And it was a surprise. And it was just a really fulfilling experience, and I thought I had built my karma wheel, if you will, forever. And I had done that for a few years, and we had done it, I think I had done 46 houses across the country. And then all of a sudden, in August of 2007, this company who we thought had endless pockets suddenly went down upside down overnight. And I was not really thoughtful about what could have been the causation of this problem. I just kind of accepted it for what it was, moved on, and decided to take the opportunity to start my own company. And as a producer, I'd been in the business for over a decade. I spent my time in Hollywood doing my thing, and I thought, hey, as I approach my 40th birthday, this is as good of a time as any to start my own company. And I set out to, because I had a little bit of savings, set out to get my own company started and juiced, and I found an investor, and it took about a year in the process, but our deal actually was supposed to manifest on September 15th, 2008. Suddenly, the world went upside down, or I like to say now, revealed itself for what it actually was, and I got caught up in the avalanche like millions of others, and before you know it, I'm fighting for my life. I don't have income. My wife and I are losing basically everything, and we ended up losing our home to wrongful foreclosure because of the robo-signing mess.
And what kind of things did you and your family try to, in order to survive, to try to make it during that time?
Well, I had to get we both got two jobs apiece. It was amazing. I went from about six-figure income and healthcare and all of the other sorts of things that, well, actually, I shouldn't say that. I live in a right-to-work state, so I took care of all that myself. But the long and the short of it is we had a comfortable middle-class sort of, I would say, 101 lifestyle. And, you know, my wife was a stay-at-home mom, and she could do whatever she wanted, basically. And then suddenly when we got thrown into the spin cycle, we both had to take the types of jobs that we had done 10 years previously. And I live in a resort community, so I got a job as a waiter in a restaurant and also working in a ski shop. And my wife pushed out catering sorts of things. And anyway, we were working around, I'd say twice as much, if not three times as much as what we were previously, making about a third of what we were just on my income alone. And man, it was a wake-up call, because there's this huge divide that just made me understand there was a collapse of the middle class and there wasn't a lot of opportunities. And that ultimately set me on this adventure to make this film.
Yeah, and talk about that, how that came about. I mean, in the midst of this, how did you, in the midst of this crisis, start to make this film?
Well, you know, I had been watching a lot of the cable news sort of, you know, spin cycle pundits and the back and forth, and none of them were speaking to my experience. The only one who really caught fire with me was a guy by the name of Dylan Radigan, who was on MSNBC, and his thing has floated around forever when he blew up and basically said, you know, the United States has collapsed and we have a bunch of criminals running the show and both parties are complicit. And, you know, it's funny because that gets passed around today as much as it did 2 years ago when it happened. And that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back for me. And I was trying to get some other projects off the ground, as you might expect for someone who's done this for 10 years. And I finally was like, you know what? This hell that my wife and I are going through actually is an interesting sort of entry point, and I got to figure out what's going on in this, in the country. What's led to this? I don't get it, because I'm not getting it from mainstream media. So one thing led to another. There was somebody in my community of means who I had seen posting Facebook posts that essentially was saying the same type of stuff I was. And so I went to him and I said, look, man, I've got this idea. This was my story, and I'd like to make a film using our stories as the entry point, because nobody's getting the real story of what's going on with the banks and the foreclosure, the modification process and the whole spin cycle. And it just seems like fraud to me. So I've got to figure out what's going on. Simultaneously, I was reading a lot of Matt Taibbi, incidentally, and Rolling Stone, who was turning me on to a world I would never have seen otherwise. And this gentleman, who happens to be from one of the wealthiest families in the country, decided to fund this project. And the reason he did was because his entire world was created from the rise of the middle class of this country. That's what made his family. And he thought it was incumbent upon himself to reinvest in America. So here's the irony. We talked about the disparity of wealth today, and we talked about, I mean, there's just so many horrible, tragic things that have happened to the collapse of the United States. But in this particular case, I had a one in a billion shot, and I got lucky because one guy believed in the American dream. And together we decided to go try to figure out what the heck was going on. And we didn't have a plan. And ironically enough, and it was serendipitous, I should say, I ended up getting on the road on September 17th, 2011, the day the Occupy Wall Street movement started. And we ended up going to 23 Occupy encampments across the country, covering 7,500 miles. We started in Salt Lake City the day it started, and we crisscrossed the country going to Portland first because that's where my loan servicer was. And then we ended up going to, after all of that journey, to New York City, and ended up the day that it actually got busted up by the NYPD. So the journey itself was just unbelievable, and we basically connect the dots of what's happened. We reveal that we no longer live in a democracy, that free markets are a myth, and the American dream is dead, and the purveyors of all of it basically are the ones responsible for the problem. So what are we going to do about it?
Well, Patrick, I'd like to play the, I believe it's the trailer from your film, as to give people a little bit of a taste of what it's like, and then we can talk more about it after we hear that, okay?
Sounds great.
Okay, so we're going to hear the trailer.
The American people are angry.
Our scientists tell us that we are in the early stages of the sixth great extinction event in the history of this planet in the last 500 million years.
They are angry because they are living through the worst recession since the Great Depression.
Imagine a giant asteroid on a direct collision course with Earth.
And we could lose upwards of 70% of all the life forms on this Earth.
Yet we dither, taking no action to divert the asteroid.
There are no jobs.
I believe that America is going in the wrong direction right now.
We are getting absolutely hammered in this country.
Who am I? I'm just a regular guy trying to make his way. And while we've never met, I'm far from expendable. Chances are you're not either.
Exactly, we're not expendable. I don't know what it means to be a patriot. I just know what it means to fight for what's right.
The American dream and everything it represents is my lifeblood.
The American dream today is in trouble.
I got caught flat-footed and I had no plan B. My world turned to darkness. I failed my family.
The whole oil thing, eventually it's going to end. I don't know when it's going to be. I don't know if 20 years, 50 years, 100 years from now. It's going to happen.
This is the way that you control people in democratic societies. You basically spread enough lies out there that you don't let people get educated about what's happening to them.
And that's exactly what led to this journey. I had to break out of my space, and I had to connect with America on her terms.
For better or for worse, you're definitely a force of nature. Man. When Pat's around, something's going to happen.
American presidents used to call us to greatness.
Anybody who says that we have a capitalist system right now is deluding themselves.
I believe in a country that is of the people, for the people, and by the people.
Can you imagine an American presidential candidate building a campaign around that today? Impossible.
A true hero's journey, and thank you for sharing it with the world.
And that was the trailer for the film Forward 13, Waking Up the American Dream, made by Patrick Lovell, who is on the phone with us today on KBOO Portland here on Political Perspectives. Patrick, any insight you can give us to some of the voices we just heard in that trailer and how they fit into the film?
Absolutely. You know, the way I wanted to approach this film, as the actual story started to manifest in my head as we were traveling around the country and setting up interviews on the fly, I've been a producer, like I said, for over a decade, and I always approach things where we have to know everything we're going to do before we actually shoot a shot. And in this case, it was the truest documentary in the sense of the word. We got on the road and we just tried to figure things out. And so as you heard there was a couple of different sort of issues manifesting the through line. And we had James Hansen, of course, the former NASA director, who has been on the forefront of screaming that climate change is something of beyond comprehension magnitude. Also, Jeremy Rifkin, Van Jones, who obviously has been a speaker to social justice for some time, as well as Jeremy Rifkin, who is the author of The Third Industrial Revolution, which we get to in our film is the pathway forward. And we also heard in there from Adam Bronfman, who is the funder of our film. I was transparent about that because I was always frustrated watching documentaries not knowing where the funding was coming from and what the agenda was, because as much as people try to pretend they're objective, typically they're not as objective as they come out to be. And what we decided, what we figured out was that the madness that we're experiencing right now, and this is what I'm trying to get through to the progressive side, there's so many issues that are siloed, particularly because of funding initiatives and that sort of thing. They don't connect the dots. The long and the short of it is we understand that there's a system that's corrupt and defunct and unsustainable that is sort of branched out, not sort of, it is, from our multinational sort of 40 years of deregulation, offshoring, and outsourcing that's basically collapsed the American dream. And by putting these things together, by creating the revolving door, we show that the 2008 implosion of the housing crisis isn't a standalone event. And the brothers in arms to the fraudulent activity of Wall Street is the energy industry, and both of them own our government. So what this is trying to do is make people understand how the revolving door works. And once you get on the rabbit hole, there's no turning back. And the hope is, in light of the 2014 midterms, we've got to come together as quickly as possible to not enable this disaster to continue. Because our only chance, I believe, is at the voting booth. But what are we going to vote for? And so the idea of this film is to get people under one roof, the kind of people that want to get money out of politics, that want to get create a sustainable future, and also people that have been sideswiped by the implosion. And when you pull all of those people under one roof, you have the opportunity to galvanize and then get people marching in the right direction. Ultimately, I hope it's the antithesis of the Tea Party and the billionaire-funded Republican movement.
And so is that what you hope to do in Portland, is have a discussion as well as a showing?
Absolutely. I invite everyone in the community, from Occupy Portland, of course, to those kind of groups that I had just mentioned, and to add their voice. Because what you remember the bumper sticker, act, think globally, act locally. We all have to figure out a way to be able to reboot our systems locally and then manifest a national sort of movement. And that's the problem right now, because everybody is so fragmented and there's so much distortion and disinformation out there, nobody can get moving in the right direction. So the hope is you get people's attention long enough to get them under this roof through a through line that then at the end of it, everybody's like, okay, so what do we do next? And even though we identify it in the film, but ultimately have people able to dialogue so that we can move those movements forward locally and both nationally. And we're trying to do it as quickly as possible because we only need a couple hundred million people to be on the same page.
Mm-hmm. This week, particularly, we've heard some reports, some economic news in the corporate press about foreclosures and the decrease in foreclosures. I have a line here from an article: foreclosures plummeted in July, a positive sign for the housing market and broader economic recovery. Have you heard these kind of reports, and what's your take on them?
Yeah, on page two is the report that shows that we're back into the subprime lending, and they're doing the same securitizations they did in 2008, which means nothing's changed, which means we've got another bubble on the way. And that's the reality. The economy hasn't replaced itself. It hasn't reinvigorated itself because we're still playing the same games that we did in 2008. Nothing has changed. We had a president that came in 2008 riding a populist wave that said, change we can believe in. He never defined what that change was. And now we're back at it again. And you're right. You preface the corporate-run media because it's all a shell game. It's the most unbelievable Orwellian thing I've ever seen in my life. And I have to pinch myself sometimes to believe this is happening. It's insanity.
You mentioned the local connection. I have a story from our newscast last night, or a clip from a story from our newscast last night here from done by Janka Soderberg, our PM news director, about a woman, Alicia Jackson L., who is a Portland homeowner, and she was moved back into her foreclosed home with the help of community activists 2 years ago.
Oh, cool.
And she was now forcibly evicted last week. And,
not cool.
Yeah. And so just a little clip from that with Alicia Jackson L. talking with Jenka about the history of her situation.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit of the history? I know that you've been fighting this foreclosure eviction for a couple of years now and have had a lot of support, at least in the past, from solidarity activists and anti-foreclosure activists, people from Occupy Portland, We Are Oregon, and other groups.
I guess it started in 2008. I lost my job and I wasn't able to keep up with the payments. And so I started getting these notices, you know, you're being foreclosed, you're losing your home, and all this other stuff. And so we did evict before the sheriff came. And so I've been fighting mainly with Fox Capital. They're the last ones to hang on. Everybody else, you know, just dropped off.
So who owned the mortgage? Did they sell it to Fox Capital? And who's Fox Capital?
We don't know who owns the mortgage. And Fox Capital supposedly bought the property on the courthouse steps, but I doubt that's true. And and also there was a...
What part of town is your house located in? Do you feel there's a gentrification process going on that's contributed to the situation that you're in now?
Yes, yes, I do. It's in Northeast Portland, and gentrification always plays a part in evicting people. You know, I know it's hard to for people to keep going and keep the keep the struggle going, but it's something that we have to do. I know it's something that I have to do, and I'm not, like I keep saying, I'm not going to give up.
Again, I've been speaking with Alicia Jackson L., who has been fighting her foreclosure eviction from her home in Northeast Portland for a number of years and has now finally been evicted, her belongings being taken out of the home by Fox Capital, which plans to remodel and then sell her home. I'm Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
Patrick, do you want to comment on that story?
Wow, what an amazing piece to have within our dialogue. Like I said right before that, nothing has changed. What that reveals, and there's several things happening concurrently, I've learned since Ferguson that I think a lot of us have been paying attention to this sort of prison industrial thing that's happening in these minority communities, or I should say it's not even minority necessarily, it's poverty-stricken communities where they are serving warrants like crazy. And what I've learned, there's like, I think, three times as many warrants as there are people in Ferguson, and that led to a lot of the problems that had erupted there. And what I've since learned, and this is happening in Cleveland, this is happening in Florida, this is happening all over the place, is that there's this initiative to basically force people into foreclosure where they have to sign over their houses to be able to pay off the warrants. It's crazy. And so the gentrification aspect of it is – it just seems so deviant and so insidious, but it's par for the course for these investment bankers that find every which way to basically be the giant vampire squid that Matt Taibbi described them being back in 2009. And to take that a step further, the idea that that we have a recovery is ridiculous in the housing market. But ultimately, it just brings it back to this. I don't know if you've read this amazing and timely op-ed that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar did in Time magazine, mm-hmm. but he was saying there has to be a connection between the fallen middle class and those that are in poverty to be able to create the new civil rights movement that's going to wake America up. And that coincidentally is exactly what we're doing. I went from six figures to practically nothing overnight. I come from a family that's part of the 1%, and here's the two worlds that I navigate through. For example, my parents are doing better than ever. They worked for 40 years investing in the stock market, retirement, all the rest of it. And my dad's a pretty savvy guy,
but at the same time, his world is so different than the world that's three blocks beneath him. And we have this great divide going on. And to your point about the gentrification, this is a complete architected, engineered sort of situation that needs to get attention. I welcome anyone in the Portland area to please come and share your story with us. And, you know, we need to have this dialogue. We need to get people on the same page, because the only chance we have to move this thing around, I believe, is what we're trying to accomplish, is to create both a intellectual and a consumer-driven revolution before we actually have to have a bloody one downstream.
And that that time that you can connect with Patrick Lovell and the film Forward 13 is next Thursday, September 4th, at the Clinton Street Theater. Is that at 7?
Yes, ma'am, at 7 p.m., followed by a Q&A and dialogue, and I just want it to be a giant conversation afterwards. So please, everyone in Portland, come, and let's get together on this, because there's no time to lose.
And where else are you going to be showing your film in this way,
Patrick? All across the country. What we're doing right now, it's interesting. In fact, if there's any students from the area that are interested in organic screenings, we're pushing out things simultaneously. So community organic screenings as well as a tour. And then the film is available currently online at forward13thefilm.com or on Amazon or on Hulu. But it's really best situated, you know, when you have people and organizers and activists and people that have experienced this come under the same roof. It's not quite the same as watching it on your iPad alone. We need each other in this whole situation. That's the whole idea of the film.
And briefly, do you think it's still possible to have the American dream?
Well, I think it's up to us, and I really do believe that. And I think that both that we, the people, are both the solution and the problem. It depends on how apathetic or activated we are. And I think that Americans have to understand the whole system was written so that we were responsible and accountable. And that's the message of what we do in Forward 13, is we're all accountable. So do I believe the American dream is possible? You better believe it. I think that it's more possible now. And I think that the future is beautiful. We just have to turn the tables on the problem. The third industrial revolution, built on sustainable energy and basically reversing inversion tax code, those are two of the big paradigms that need to change, because if we can do that, then we'll reinvigorate the United States, which of course means the upwardly mobile middle class. And that's exactly what I'm fighting for.
Okay, Patrick Lovell, I want to thank you very much for speaking about this with us today and wish you the best with your continued work. Thank you.
Thank you for the time, and all the best to you and KBOO.
Thank you. And again, the film we're talking about is Forward 13, showing next Thursday, September 4th, at Clinton Street at 7 p.m. The issue of tax inversion that Patrick just referred to is going to be a topic on Flashpoints today, coming up at 10:15. So stay tuned for that. Stay tuned next. Jinx Soderberg is up with an interview with a Maui activist. This is Kathleen Stevenson for Political Perspectives. If you missed any or a part of this interview and want to hear it again, you can hear it a little bit later this morning at kboo.fm/political perspectives.
In a beautiful house with a beautiful wife, you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here? This is not my beautiful house. You may tell yourself, this is not my beautiful wife.
I'm speaking now with Sam Small, who is a part of the organization Shaka, Sustainable Hawaiian Agriculture for the Kiki and the Aina. What happened in Kauai County with the passage of a measure that restricts GMOs and pesticides?
Well, the court seems to have ruled against Kauai's attempt, the county's attempt to have any say in terms of regulating pesticides and GMOs there. And how it affects us here on Maui, their measure is a little bit different than ours. Theirs was primarily targeted towards pesticides. Ours is primarily targeted towards GMOs. The courts have said that because the federal government and the state government have an infrastructure of regulations in place regarding pesticides and GMOs, that it's not appropriate for the county to get involved. The problem with that is that there is an infrastructure about pesticides. The state has regulations, and it does actively regulate and monitor a level of pesticide use. We think that that they don't perform very well based on results. They're understaffed, they're underfunded, and pesticides are essentially under-regulated. But there are no regulations regarding GMOs, other than issuing some permits for experiments on GMOs and